Thank you so much for tuning again this week. The Breathe Faith and Creativity Podcast is now brought to you by the amazing family-owned coffee shop Corridor Flow, located in the quaint town of Lomita, California. The three visionary pillars that Corridor Flow stand for are coffee, community, and create. The owners, Nori and Tin Bermudez, view their shop as an extension of their living room, open to whomever needs a place to belong. They believe Corridor Flow is a place where life happens, where bonds are made over coffee and conversation. And what I personally love about their spirit is that they want to get back to the basics, back to relationships over social media, people over profit, giving back versus taking, and collaborations over competition. Seriously, even within this pandemic, all I want to do is spend my entire day there. So the next time you're in the South Bay area of Los Angeles, make your way to Corridor Flow. You can find them on Instagram at @corridor_flow or find them on the web at corridorflow.com, and make sure the next time you're there, try their delicious Spanish latte with oat milk and one of their satisfying sandwiches. Corridor Flow, coffee, community, create. You won't be disappointed.
Welcome to the Breathe Podcast, where we explore the intersection of faith and creativity. We interview artists from all walks of life to discover how faith plays a role in their art and expression, hoping to encourage you to live a life of creativity and faith. And now, please welcome your co-hosts, Derek Engoy, Christian Mendoza, and Kevin Horton.
Yep. Welcome back to the Breathe Faith and Creativity Podcast. Thank you once again for joining this week. Straight from Torrance, California, my name is Derek Engoy, one of the co-hosts from Cerritos, California. We got Christian Mendoza. Say what up, Chris?
Yo, what up?
And from Strong Beach, Long Beach, California, we got Kevin Horton. Kevin, would you say hello to everybody?
Hello to everybody.
Look at that. I love the deepness. I love the... How y'all doing today?
Doing awesome. Awesome as usual.
I'm doing awesome. So, are you sure about that, Chris? Are you really doing awesome?
Yeah, I am, man. I'm like laid back like an old like lady and a cat curled up on my bed.
Crocheting a sweater?
Yeah, dude, with a bubble jacket on. Oh, dude.
That's what kind of cat?
Hugh Hefner.
Hugh Hefner, dude.
You know what I'm saying?
Oh, that's a picture there.
I got a cup of coffee. Oh, dude.
I already had my coffee. I had my latte, did my latte art. Yeah. Oh, yeah. By the way, I owe you guys some coffee beans. A couple of episodes ago, yeah. I talked about roasting beans. I got them dialed in. So get ready for these beans. It's going to be awesome.
I got all my cups ready. They just need coffee in them.
They're coming. Hey, Kevin.
Oh, Derek.
Oh, what's up?
Hey, can I ask you something?
Sure.
I saw you drawing.
Yeah,
what's
man.
Up with that? How did that feel?
Well,
I just wanted to, talk to you about that.
I used my Apple Pen on my iPad, so it didn't feel like paper, of course. And I had to get used to the glide of the glass screen, but it was fun. Yeah. You know,
yeah. Did you see like similarities and differences between poetry and the actual drawing? I mean, what did you actually encounter?
So lately, when I do sketch, it's my way of connecting with God. I don't draw as much anymore as I used to way, way back when I used to draw on walls.
I do that. we can draw on walls legally now, son.
Yeah, I know. But you know, back in my day, it wasn't very legal. But,
but it's our day now too.
Yeah, but you know, it's been fun, and I try to only draw what I feel the Spirit is leading me to draw. So it's kind of it's more like a prayer for me.
Yeah, exactly.
And, you know, I might draw a surfboard or a cube, but through the drawing, I'm praying, I'm connecting with God, and it's been fun. And you know, I didn't buy the actual Apple pencil. My family got me a generic Apple pencil for my birthday this past year. So it was, Maybe $30, but it works nonetheless. It
hey,
does
whatever,
the job.
Man.
Yeah.
Like, you don't need a billion pressure points. You
That's
only
right.
need 1 million. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah.
And ultimately, if you need a draw, dude, you just pull out a piece of paper
right.
and some burnt coffee beans.
That's
if you
right.
can't do it, if you can't do it with that, dude, you can't do it at all.
That's right.
It doesn't,
That's
it right. doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Know?
No, thanks for asking. It was fun. Hey, Kevin, I saw you and our good friend Justin. You guys recorded an episode for his Patreon page. Yeah, how's that?
Yes, we did. We just, all we did there was he said, hey, what are you doing right now? I said, talking to you. And he said, let's press record. And I had no idea what we were doing, but we just, as on here, I have no idea what I'm doing. But here and I just... We just talked and talked and talked, and it was a lot of fun.
That's cool. Yeah, props out to Justin Castillo. He has a podcast out there, Tsunami Healing. I was on one of the episodes early on when he first launched. But yeah, look it out. If you want to support them, go ahead and check it out and look them up.
Great podcast, great person.
Yeah, yeah. Well, hey, guys, I got an icebreaker question for you guys.
Sure.
Hey, don't ask me why. Maybe because my family and I watched every single Home Alone movie out there the past couple of months. You guys don't see Kevin, but he's putting Kevin Horton is acting like Kevin McAllister and putting his hands on his face. But here's my icebreaker question for you guys. If Harry and Marv, you know, Harry and Marv, the robbers in the movie from Home Alone, they're intimately known as the Wet Bandits. If Harry and Marv were to rob your house, what's the one thing of value that they would take? Chris, let's start with you. What would Harry and Marv take from your house?
Well, one thing's for sure, they would get a lot of paintings.
Yeah, yep.
And they would probably have a ton of paint like all over their face and permanent inks. They would definitely leave with a lot more color than they definitely entered in. That's for sure.
Kind of like the movie.
Yeah, dude. Like, I got, because being an artist, collecting art supplies is a monster in itself. And so, yeah, dude, I have a surplus of all kinds of crazy stuff I'm just ready to unleash. And so, yeah, man, if they were to, like, open the wrong door, dude, you know what I'm saying?
And then crash. All you need is, that's all you need. All you need is the feathers to cover them with the paint,
man,
and boom.
Some of these liquids are flammable, homie.
Oh.
Like, yeah, you don't want to mess around in my closet.
You and Kevin McAllister should partner up for the next round of... How about you, Kevin? Kevin, not McAllister, but Kevin Horton. What if Harry and Marv, the Wet Bandits, got to your house? What's one thing of value they would take?
Well, it depends upon where they go in. If they go into the garage, I don't know if they would be able to get out because the garage is perilously held together just by all the stuff I've lived for the last 3,000 years is stuffed in there. So you won't be able to find them if they open the garage door. But if they came through the front door, they would probably go for a sign that I have from Bob Gurr, which is from the original Haunted Mansion ticket booth.
Yeah.
That would probably be walking off with them.
Wow, that's awesome. For me...
How about you?
Yeah, I would... And depending on the state of Harry and Marv, where they're at in the given day they come to my house, I would say my collection of books. I have a collection of books that I personally value. No one else might find any worth in my collection of books, but I have a lot of books. I have a collection of records, vinyl, which they might have some better luck at hawking if they wanted to. And then I have a collection of Star Wars memorabilia, toys, posters, things like that. And so all of my collectibles that, again, I hold dear to my heart. No one else might, but that's what they would take off with. So Wet Bandits,
man,
do your best.
Straight I just jacket, love that man. Scene in that movie. I love that scene in that movie where they come up to the door. I don't know if it's the pizza delivery man, but it's like, is it Humphrey Bogart
playing? That's right.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You filthy animals.
And then Joe Pesci, man, we'll take it, Goodfellas, man. When Tommy stabs Billy Bats, you know what I'm saying?
the two Utes. Okay. That's another film.
Before,
the two Utes.
Yeah. Before it gets a little too crazy. Yeah, I'd like to tell you guys.
We can digress so much. It's so beautiful.
Let's go to the Instagram page. Let's pop our handle at breathe.podcast and join our community. We're starting to grow. We're starting to give out the Breathe Bloom package. We got coffee beans and we got signed prints by our co-hosts and we're doing good. So Yeah, join us at breathe.podcast on Instagram and help spread the word.
And while you're all coffeeed up, you could also head on over to our Patreon page under Derek Engoy, and you can specifically support this podcast and help cover some of the costs to keep it running. Speaking of that, we want to give a shout out to Karen Caesar for her recent monthly support. She jumped in at $10 a month, which will help tremendously in covering some of our costs like web hosting and equipment maintenance. So thank you very much.
Yeah. And I also want to take this time to remind everyone that it would be so great if you would go onto Apple Podcasts and rate and review our show. Give us a 5-star rating and make sure you hit that subscribe button to get notifications every time we release a brand new episode. And speaking of which, got another shout out to someone else. Shout out to our most recent reviewer on Apple Podcasts. Much love to Janet Weiss, who left a review this past week. This is what she said, guys. She said, "Let me be clear. I am not a super religious person. And that being said, this podcast is for everyone. The hosts guide everyone to open up and speak from faith and extended spirituality. I found it fascinating and entertaining. Will definitely be a top fan." So Janet Weiss, thank you so much for being a top fan. We appreciate your kind words. And we will definitely, and we'll definitely continue to strive to bring you intriguing and encouraging content. So
that's awesome. I mean, that's our ultimate goal.
Yep. Yeah. It helps keep us going. So keep at it, guys. Thank you so much. All right. So there's this new book that's out now. It dropped, I believe, February 10th, a couple of weeks ago, last week or so. And it's called, get this, guys, the book is called Reclaiming Diversity. And then the subtitle is Destroying the Myth of the White Man's Religion. And I know it's heavy, but I had the great privilege of interviewing the author of the book this past week. His name is Ramon Mayo. I kept calling him Mayo. That's maybe my
it's the Spanish Tagalog thing, man.
That's right. But he goes by Ramon Mayo, and we had
OJ Mayo.
That's right. Like OJ Mayo. And we had an invigorating conversation about Christianity, specifically in America. And one of the many things that we talked about was how our faith is lived out in this country in particular. And before we get to his interview, I wanted to get both of your takes on Christianity here in America. And so my question that perhaps we can start off with discussing is, why is there such a fusion of American nationalism or American conservatism, if you want to call it that, and Christianity? Why is there such a fusion between the two? What are your takes on that? Kevin, you have any thoughts on that?
I do, and I've been trying to think all day how I would answer something like that. And I was thinking of everybody always points back to our forefathers, and you think about Thomas Jefferson and Benjamin Franklin and all the people that signed the Declaration of Independence. But more study that I do for that, I realize they were more fractionalized back then than we thought in thought and pattern. So even back then, they were a mishmash of beliefs, but they came together to sign that declaration. And I just think that with Christianity and conservatism, just look at the social media nowadays and you realize it's all across the board. You've got people have opinions everywhere. There's armchair, I call them armchair warriors. They're ready to fight for whatever cause. And now 10, 20, 30 years ago, there were, I would say, two factions. There were the not so conservative and the conservative, but now it almost is, there's a lot of different viewpoints out there.
Yeah. What about you, Chris? Why do you think there's such a fusion of American nationalism and Christianity?
A lot of it, I mean, it has to do with Kevin. I mean, like, we have the Pledge of Allegiance. We have God Bless America. On our money, it says, "In God We Trust."
Right.
I mean, a lot of the groups that he's talking about, like Puritan work ethic, a lot of the groups that sailed over from Europe over to the U.S., they were religiously persecuted. Mm-hmm. And so we associate with all that. And then now, you know, it's kind of somewhat disbanded somewhat. But I mean, it's totally infused in our culture. But I mean, since we have so much diversity, a lot of people are kind of like hands off.
Yeah. Yeah.
What do you think?
Yeah. I mean, obviously, when the founding fathers birthed the nation that we live in, there was a belief in God, of course, that they held dearly, and the context was different, obviously. And, you know, one can look back and argue that their view of God was so limiting, perhaps. You know, they justified slavery by, you know, by the words in the scriptures. And again, I'm not going to go into a deep dive into the founding fathers, but all I could speak of is now. And we know that, you know, slavery and hate and anything like, and I don't want to get too deep into what was released earlier this year with a, I won't even say his name, but he was a prominent evangelical leader who passed away last year. And it came out that, you know, he, you know, for the lack of words, didn't protect the women he was around. And if anything, abused the women and used his power and authority to gain this kind of position over women. And I just think when a leader, whether it be a religious leader, a national leader, a governmental leader, uses their power for their own advancement, and even more so uses the scriptures for their own advancement, I really believe that there's a hardening, I don't say hardening, but a broken heart, if you will, of God to use his own words, to use God's own scripture to the advantage and advancement of, you know, someone's own selfishness. And throughout history, that's been the case where leaders across the board would use the scriptures for their own gain. And because, and here's where I think maybe you were getting at, Chris, too, because Christianity is so ingrained into the American fabric, because its foundings, the negative also comes with it.
Right? Yeah.
We can't take the good and just focus on that. The bad comes along with it, unfortunately. And there's been such a huge backlash over the past few years. And let's be honest, even within the pandemic, even with all the riots that happened last year, the name of the Christian religion has been tainted, not by anyone else, but by our own doing. And I say our as in like the whole collective church, because of the various reasons. And more sexual allegations, for instance, go back to that, is popping up with evangelical leaders. And it's unfortunate. And I find myself, not that I have to, but I find myself a lot apologizing to people who don't follow Jesus for the way the Christian face has looked in our country. And it's such a horrible position to be in, to have to feel like you have to apologize for the whole of your own faith, you know? And so that's what I would say. Again, there's such a fusion, but what I appreciate about Ramon, and what I think we talked about in the interview too, is that we have to understand that Jesus wasn't Western, right? He wasn't an American. And many times we equate so much because the fact that Christianity is in the fabric of our nation, we equate the Christian religion to this European version. I'll say it that way, this European version of Jesus. And I just feel like, and maybe this is, you know, pointing to the book of Revelation, where life is going to get a lot harder for the believer. And, you know, maybe we are closer than we were before to the end, because a lot of these are popping up, a lot of these struggles, a lot of these issues, at least that I'm not talking. See, when Christians say that, oh, I'm being persecuted because I have to wear a mask and I refuse to wear a mask, I'm being persecuted. Well, no, you're not. You're just being a jerk. You know, wear your mask, man. Like, it's for the love and the health of everyone else. That's not persecution. That's just you not following the mandates. But, you know,
it weighs like what, fractions of a gram.
Right. But there, you know, but if we're of the belief of the scriptures, there is a time where Christian persecution is definitely going to be on the rise. And there is this undertone that it is coming, and it's not fully here, but it's like peeking its head out. And there's going to be a time specifically here in the West, in the Western culture, that we're going to see that more and more, unfortunately. And I know that I'm going all over the place with it, but whenever it comes to talk of faith in Jesus, I can talk for days. I can talk for hours. because I love separating the two when it comes to talking about Jesus and American nationalism, because it's so, so synonymous, it seems, when they're not. We have to be able to understand that Christianity wasn't made for America, or America didn't make Christianity.
I guess you hit it. I mean, you're talking about the whole taking the scriptures and bending it to like somebody's own purpose. And so when you see like white supremacist groups, you know, claiming God, but, you know, Jesus was all about compassion and letting everybody in, but these guys are promoting hate. You kind of see, you know, and you have to apologize for that, things like that. And it's just like, sometimes you just got to drop it and realize like, hey, I can't control them.
Yeah.
But what I can control is me and how I perceive it. And whatever I do in my life and my actions, I'm not even going to talk. I just going to let my actions speak. And when they see the purity and the goodness from my actions, people are going to want to be down with me.
And that's all I know. That's so good, Chris, where... You know, we have an obligation to live out our faith in the public.
Yeah, it's like forget words.
Yeah, we have this obligation to live it out with authenticity, with humility, with honesty, without the need or the desire to advance, if you will, to put ourselves in position to be above someone else.
Yeah.
Because if you look at the narrative of God in the scriptures, he didn't really put himself above anyone else. In fact,
yeah, he's washing people's feet.
Right. God, even before that, though, God left his throne to come into human history as Jesus. Right. And so he left heaven, you know, he left his throne to become immortal or immortal, if you will. Let's talk like comic books, or let's talk like movie narratives, right? You got the immortal God who broke the barriers and came into human history to be, and he became mortal. And he, as Jesus, God had to submit to everything, right? Jesus was hungry. Jesus became tired. You know, when God, if you look at
sleep.
Right, he had to go to sleep. You know, we don't like talking like this, but Jesus had to use the restroom, just like all of us. Right,
kind of like Superman.
Right, you know. What about you, Kevin? Any other thoughts?
I just like that part that Ramon talked about, where it said that Jesus wasn't born in America, and that really rung true with me about the fact that we try to Americanize everything, or like take ownership of everything. And you think about it, and I have a picture of Jesus in the room where I am, and I've had people talk to me and say they really don't know what Jesus looked like, or I've seen pictures of saying that people were, they think he looked like this and he has a different skin color. Or have you ever seen that?
Yep.
Or Chris?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'd like to actually talk about that a little later too. It's like, does it really matter?
Yeah. Yeah. Hold that for later. That's some good thoughts. Hold that for later.
Does it really matter?
And the other thing I wanted to say is that we go back to discussing about social media, and I hear people say, can't we just agree to disagree? Or agree, can't we all get along? Or I've heard that several times, but where what I was looking at recently was I'll just say, I like to study presidential debates, just go way back and go, okay, way back in the 40s, what was it like? And I'll tell you what, they're a lot different than they are now, but back then they agreed to disagree, and they didn't always agree, but it was civil.
Yeah.
So I think the thing here is like Chris said, put one foot in front of the other, love Jesus, take a breath, relax.
Yeah.
And then like they say on those recipes, rinse, repeat, repeat, rinse. And do not confuse high altitude directions with regular earthly directions, because your recipe will be messed up.
Yeah.
And then gym tan laundry, right?
That's right.
Well, hey, that's a good point to pause. We'll definitely get more into our discussion after the interview. So that being said, guys, sit back, relax, and enjoy our chat with Ramon Mayo, author of the brand new book, Reclaiming Diversity, Destroying the Myth of the White Man's Religion. All right, today on the Breathe Faith and Creativity podcast, we have an exciting guest for you. I've known Ramon for nearly, I don't know, 15 years maybe. We met way back in, I don't know, 2006, yeah. Right? He was on the pastoral team at the time of a church called Vineyard Extreme that met and owned a local coffee shop, which was really cool. They had local bands show up. They had an amazing space, which I studied at a lot, space for kids, a computer lab. It was pretty dope. So that's when we met. He is no longer in California. He's out in the Chicago area. He also recently wrote a book called Reclaiming Diversity, Destroying the Myth of the White Man's Religion, which we'll definitely dive in today. And it's released this month, just in time for Black History Month. So it's going to be an amazing conversation that we're going to have. It's my pleasure to welcome to the show Mr. Ramon Mayo. Ramon, thank you for being on the show today. Really appreciate you. How's it going?
It's going good, Derek. Thanks for that wonderful introduction.
Of course. Yeah, how's it in Chicago?
Man, it's snowy and it's cold, but you know, it's Chicago, so that's what it's supposed to be.
Man, it's like 50 degrees, maybe 40 here, and so that's chump change to you, huh?
that's shorts weather, man.
I know, it is. Actually, we went to the beach this afternoon with the family, so...
you're making me jealous.
Yeah. Well, really quickly, icebreaker question, given that you're no longer here in California, what do you miss most about the West Coast?
What do I miss the most about the West Coast? I mean, you would think the weather, but I think the overall feel of the West Coast.
Mm. What do you mean by that?
Like the culture, like it felt more like everybody was family in a sense, like everybody was new. Like there was no like, you know, you don't have that, you know, we've been here for 100 years kind of thing. It's more like everybody's a newcomer. So let's welcome them in. There's no like closed off, you know, systems there, no closed off groups. So it just felt more open.
And so you're saying that's how it is in Chicago? More closed off, more.
In Chicago, it's more closed off. You got folks who've been here since, you know, their family's been here since the 1900s. Yeah. And you don't get a lot of, you know, that people moving in. There's more people moving out than moving in.
Right.
So it's more closed off. So I miss that openness.
So let's start off real basic. This is your bio moment, right? For those listening who may not be familiar with you and what you do, why don't you start off by telling us a little bit about yourself? You know, just a brief bio. I mean, this is, you know, what makes Ramon tick? What's your faith background? What gets you out of the bed in the morning? Maybe your favorite basketball team, whatever, you know, it's simply put, who is Ramon Mayo?
Starting off from the beginning, I mean, I was raised and immersed in like church. Like my great grandfather was bishop in Pentecostal denomination, the Church of God in Christ. Mm-hmm. My grandfather was a pastor. I mean, I was in church like from day one, like every day of the week.
Yeah.
At some point, like around middle school, I really rebelled. And I rebelled more because just I didn't feel like I belonged. Like I'm a guy with a Mexican first name and, you know, my last name is Irish.
Right. Yeah.
I didn't play sports very good. You know, I wasn't athletic. And I was in church all the time. So I always felt like an outsider, like I didn't belong. I found hip hop. And I found that sense of belonging there. And so just during, you know, middle school, high school, we were doing freestyle battles and, you know, I have friends who were breakers and taggers. And so it just felt like, hey, this is my family. But also I got into like a lot of like not so good, you know, habits and things. Mm. So just making the wrong choices because the hip hop was good, but there was also some folks who were in the hip hop, but also in the crime,
yeah,
drugs and things like that. So, you know, around college, I basically, the bottom dropped out for me. I was about to basically go to jail for a long, long time.
Wow.
Basically, grand larceny.
Mm.
I got off. It was a miracle. I mean, really, like, I thought, like, this is the end of my life. I'm basically going into a life of crime. I'm going to go to jail. And basically, I came to Christ during that time.
Mm-hmm.
And just through prayer, I just prayed and my mom prayed and we found a lawyer who got me off.
Wow.
On a technicality. But I was just coming away from being a minor. I had no prior convictions, and it's like, hey, let's not ruin this kid's life. So they found something.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so that just like got me thinking like, okay, there is a God. And so from then on, like, you know, I had some, you know, getting used to the Christian life and the spiritual disciplines and practices, but I've started diving deep into, you know, just preaching, sharing my faith. I was down the block sharing my faith with the homies like every day. They smoking weed, we talking like all of this metaphysical, is there a God? What if this is all a dream?
Yeah.
But, you know, some of it, you know, there was some fruit from it. And from there on, I just dedicated my life to ministry. Mm. And so that's kind of what makes me tick, if you want to say that. Like, yeah. I just want to see people come to Jesus.
Yeah.
Like, follow Jesus and be apprentices, disciples of Jesus. Like, yeah. That's all I really care about. And I'm doing that in a different way now. I was pastoring, like you said in the intro, down in LA, and then I moved out here to Chicago, and I've been working as an editor.
Okay.
So I work for Urban Ministries, which is the largest African-American Christian publisher. Mm-hmm. And so I've been working as an editor, editing this commentary that they put out every year. And it's basically like the Sunday school, the Bible study lessons, mm-hmm. with like some PhD, you know, in-depth commentary in there.
So, I mentioned Vineyard Extreme and the coffee shop. I didn't mention the name, but the name was Awakenings. Now, obviously, it's not around anymore, but I wanted to bring that up simply because there's a new coffee shop in town in the Lomita area where you guys were, called Corridor mm-hmm. Flow. It's not a church. It's literally one, two, maybe three blocks away from where Awakenings was.
Wow.
And so so the owners, they're believers, but you know, it's not a church, but mm-hmm. it's definitely their mission field, if you will. And they've had a lot of success in building community. They celebrated their year, I believe it was back in November or so. My wife has a set up there. She does, you know, succulents, and she's set up there. Mm-hmm. But it's a great model to reach the community beyond the four walls of the church. And that's what I saw back in the day. That's what you guys were doing, right? You had bands, you had people who would never step foot in the Sunday service. But I guess, which leads me to my next question. I say that all to say is, and maybe you can share some experiences out in Chicago. What are some things that the church is doing at large? Maybe not the church that you're a part of, but what do you see happening in Chicago right now with the church at large and what they're doing to reach the community beyond the four walls of church?
So what I'm seeing, and I mean, just before, like, let's say pre-COVID, mm-hmm. and then, you know, COVID changed everything,
yeah,
right?
That's right. That's right.
But pre-COVID, I mean, we've seen just multiple things. Like right now, for our church, you know, this is a very contextual ministry, but we shovel snow for seniors.
Wow.
So, you know, if you've never been in an area that has like heavy snowfall, mm-hmm. snow shoveling is no joke.
Yeah, I can imagine.
We've had, I mean, there was 9 inches one day and then 5 more another day. And then I think today was 2 more. And so if you don't keep up on that, mm-hmm. you can basically get trapped in your driveway.
Yeah.
And so we've been, you know, fortunate enough to have like a good, strong group of men at our church to, you know, help these old folks get out their driveway.
Yeah.
But it's basically got the attention of the community.
That's good.
And people know us as the church that does this. And it's kind of that, you know, I think in Acts it talks about they enjoyed the favor, mm-hmm. the goodwill of the people. So that's something that we've been doing just to get beyond the four walls. But I mean, people are doing all kinds of stuff. I mean, open mics. I forget the name of the church, but the guy wrote the book about the hip hop church.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm familiar
Phil
with that.
Jackson.
Yeah.
Phil Jackson. And he's got a whole hip hop setup.
From the Bulls, right?
Although both from Chicago,
that's right.
Right.
Although he has some Presbyterian background, which he doesn't prescribe to anymore, but
but yeah, Phil Jackson's got this whole hip hop thing going on, teaching kids to DJ, break and MC and all this stuff.
Yeah,
but it's a great outreach to the community. So there's just multiple things going on. We've been, you know, Facebook Live, and which is surprising. We get more people beyond, I mean, not just the four walls, but beyond the geographic area.
Yeah.
Just by being online.
Wow.
So that's been something surprising. Like, we'll see, like, oh, this person is from Puerto Rico, or, you know?
Yeah.
So that's kind of the good thing about, I mean, if you want to say COVID as a good thing.
Yeah.
Let's say a good turn of events.
Right.
About, you know, this whole COVID season.
What would you say? What do you think is the biggest lesson that COVID has taught the church?
That the church is not the building.
Mm, yeah.
The church is not the building. And that's something that, you know, one of the reasons why we had the church in the coffee house was to say, hey, the church can be in any situation and be the church.
Yeah.
So they're meeting, you know, I think it says where two or three are gathered, and you go to one of these churches in Ethiopia or, you know, Mexico, and it's like, man, we are out here in a tent.
Yeah.
And it's like way more attendance and way more passion to be out here in the tent worshiping Jesus than folks who get like a nice air conditioned.
That's right. Yeah.
You know, place to worship. So,
yeah.
You know, we're learning that. And I think one of the things that I wouldn't even say the church, but COVID has brought into our lives the sense that nothing is permanent. We take a lot of things for granted.
Like, yeah.
In the West, we take a lot of things for granted where somebody in, you know, the 2/3 world wouldn't take that for granted.
Right.
Like, you know, we take our economy for granted. We take all of these creature comforts for granted. But you have something like, you know, a pandemic, and it's like, wait, I can't go outside? What?
Yeah.
You know, I can't be around people. I think we kind of have this sense of, you know, not to get too political, but, you know, a lot of it had to do with my rights, you know,
right.
Seeing a lot of this, hey, this is my right. And it's like, no, what are your real rights?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So I think we take that for granted. Like,
well, you know, let's pivot to your book, because I think when you're talking about, and I love the subtitle there, well, it was probably not even a subtitle, but the part, you know, where it talks about destroying the myth of the white man's religion. And I think when you're talking about maybe not so much rights, but how it's always been, where there's a faction of America that thinks Christianity is this quote unquote white man's religion, and we know it's not, but because of its origins here in our country, you know, there's a portion of citizens in our country that kind of lean that way, you know, mm-hmm. And, you know, when anything goes outside of that quote unquote tradition, they question it, you know? And so you bring up a lot of the origins of the faith in your book, which I love. And so let's talk about it a little bit. It's really informative. It's encouraging. So why don't you tell us a little bit about, you know, what the book is about and why you decided to write it?
So basically, the book is about how Christianity has been diverse from its very beginning.
Yeah.
We have like this movement in America, you know, let's be the multi-ethnic church and let's be more diverse and let's reconcile the races. But, you know, back in the first 1,000 years of Christianity, Christianity and the faith was diverse. I mean, you have folks preaching the gospel and starting churches all the way in China with mm-hmm. their own contextualized theology. You have folks in Africa, Egypt, and then further down into Nubia and Ethiopia, folks preaching the gospel in India. And so that was something that I learned in seminary. Mm-hmm. And it was like I had to take an elective course to learn that.
Wow.
And I'm thinking this should be like the main thing, right?
Yeah.
And so just talking to folks, getting into conversations online and in person where folks were saying, hey, you serve, you know, the white man's God and all of these things. I said, hey, I got to set this straight. Like, Christianity is more at home in Africa, in Asia, than in Europe. Like, it was originally, it was more contagious in Africa and Asia.
Yeah.
Than in Europe originally. So, I mean, that's why I wrote the book, like just to kind of set the record straight and show how you know, at different turning points in the history of the faith, that it kind of shifted from being an African and Asian thing to a European thing. Mm-hmm. And just the whole point of, hey, it's an everybody thing.
What would you say if someone were to pick up this book who lives out their faith through the lens of the American expression of church, what would you say is one of the biggest surprises that they'll get from this book?
I think the biggest surprise that they'll get from the book is that Jesus is not an American. Jesus is not an American. And the whole notion that, you know, we have a white and a black church, but there's a reason why, you know. And so that's something that if somebody is from this country and they're white, they'll pick up this book and see that, hey, not only is the European version of the faith a new thing, but also that the black version of the faith has been kind of running alongside the white American version of faith since the country's found.
I love how in the book you correlate a lot of, you know, the chapters. You pull bits and pieces of your own personal story before going into the meat of the chapters. And I love that. I love how authors are able to do that, where it's not just an informative book, you know, it's not just a theological book, but it has a bit of your personal story in it. What would you say to the person, you know, who is suspicious? I'll say it that way. Cause you know, as a pastor in the LA area, you know, one, I'm not white, obviously I'm Asian, but I would even say a darker version of Asian. Filipinos, I mean, we're all confused anyways, right? We were conquered by Spain, but we had Muslims who were the original inhabitants of the island, yeah. You know, and I'm also, you add to the mix, I was born on Guam. So, I mean, am I Filipino? Am I Pacific Islander? So I was just all confused. But what would you say? Yes, it's an understanding that the church is comprised of this diverse group of people that extends beyond the borders of our country. But what would you say what would you say you'd like the personal takeaway to be for someone who reads this book?
The personal takeaway. I feel like the personal takeaway is your narrow version of the faith needs to be expanded. Mm. And you know, at the conclusion, like, I didn't want to leave it to where, hey, here's all this information. So I wanted people to dive into learning and, you know, studying these, not just the old history, but even, you know, right now, what's going on in the black church, what's going on in the Asian church, what's going on, you know, overseas, and just expanding their mindset on what Christianity is. It's not just this thing that's part of your American, like some of the things we talk about as Americans have no bearing on, you know, a Christian in Kenya. Yep. So a lot of people don't realize that.
What would you say to the non-believer who would pick up this book? What would you hope for them? Obviously, obviously then, you know, other than encountering the true and living God, you know, in Jesus. But what would you say you would want the takeaway for the non-believer who reads this book?
I mean, just to destroy that barrier that, hey, this Christianity is this thing created by Europeans mm-hmm. to enslave and oppress folks. Like, that's not the story of Christianity.
Yeah, that's good. So let's pivot a little bit toward faith and creativity, right? The foundation of the show is about faith and creativity, and writing a book is a creative venture. We have this mantra on the show where, you know, we believe everyone is creative. Everyone may not be an artist, but everyone is creative in some aspect. So writing a book is also a creative venture. It's also, especially for me as a poet, it's extremely therapeutic and healing, right? Mm-hmm. Creative arts has helped me along the way in my healing journey. And, you know, whether it be depression and anxiety, whether it be stress, writing has been extremely helpful and therapeutic. How has writing this book been helpful for you and perhaps even healing for you?
You know, funny you say that, because as I included my personal stories in there, I started seeing a lot of just like, I include a lot of stories about my dad, my grandfather, and it just made me proud and just, yeah, I guess that's the word, proud. Like, hey, I had these folks in my life who, even though I strayed away from what they were teaching me, they always were that like North Star and that example that I had, like, and that I've taken it for granted in some ways.
Yeah.
But I feel like I'm coming to terms with, you know, my rebellion in a sense, like, hey, you know, I did stray away from them. And even as I was a Christian, in some ways I rebelled away from their version of the faith.
Right.
And so just kind of reconciling, you know, the faith that I took ownership of with their faith.
Yeah.
And so seeing like, hey, they have some good things that, you know, I haven't jettisoned. I haven't like abandoned those things, even though there's some things I didn't like about the way they were practicing their faith. But, you know, now it's kind of like, hey, I'm, you know, reconciling myself with them, with their faith.
Yeah, that's good. You know, obviously you're writing a book about the faith, you're writing about the origins of Christianity and the diversity within the church. And obviously we believe that God is omnipresent and he's everywhere. You can experience God everywhere. How have you put, you know, how have you specifically experienced God through writing this book?
You know, there was a point where like what you talked about with, hey, you don't want to just give people information.
Yeah.
There was a point in the writing of the book where I just said, hey, I got to put myself in this. And I don't know when, like it was early on and it just kind of flowed like that. Like I would wake up around, you know, 5 or 6 just to, you know, be up before the kids bother me.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, you know, around that time and in all that silence, it's like, what am I going to write about now? And I just experienced God like, hey, teaching me how to come at it in a way that Jesus would come at a subject like this. Like, and not to say I know the mind of Jesus.
Sure. Yeah.
But I know that Jesus worked in parables, right? He didn't just tell a straight, you know, hey, forgive people. It was more like, hey, there was this servant and yada, yada, yada. And so using stories to kind of introduce the information was something that, I felt like that's how I met God there, you know? And even like recalling stories, it's like stuff that I haven't thought about in a long time, or stuff like I talk about my trip to Israel and I didn't go to Israel to, you know, it was just a work trip, right?
Right.
I didn't go like, hey, I'm going to take all these notes and put this in my book. It's just, it's a part of me and God kind of just drew that out.
Wow. Well, speaking of Israel, when you were there and, you know, obviously it was for a work trip, but what would you say is the most fascinating thing you experienced when you were in Israel?
I got to rank these things. Right?
I know.
I think, I mean, with Israel, it was this sense of, man, everywhere I'm walking, like these dudes that I'm reading about and these women that I'm reading about, like they could be like, they could have stepped right here and I'm stepping right here.
Right.
Or they could have been drinking this water. You know,
it's
like we went to the city of David, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's this huge, I mean, it's like a national park. Like they got it all gated off and you walk in, you go through all of these, you know, tunnels and you keep going to this like aqueduct.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the aqueduct that like Hezekiah had to block off to keep the Assyrians away.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you keep getting led down and led down into like this pool. And they're like, the tour guide's like, hey, this is where all the kings were anointed.
Wow.
And it's like, wait, what? Like, this is crazy. Like, so I'm stepping where Solomon would have been stepping.
Right.
This is blowing my mind. It makes it a reality for you, but it's something that, like, I can't even explain it. It's like, we know, like, as Christians, we believe that there's a presence of God, but it's also this sense of, and, you know, I don't believe in ghosts, but it's just like the fact that these folks were here, yeah. you know, yeah. it's just that sense of that. It's a different kind of sense of presence, I guess, but yeah. it's something that, I mean, it puts goosebumps on your skin.
Wow. If Jesus could speak through your book, what would you think he would say to people?
I mean, to quote a song by The Truth, he would say, you know, I'm for everybody.
Mm, that's good.
You know, Truth had a song called J-I-F-E, Jesus is for everybody.
Yeah.
I think that's the message right there. That's what Jesus is saying.
That's so good. Yeah. Again, man, I'm looking forward to people getting their eyes on your book. It's such a good read, such a quick read too. One of the final questions that I have, let's say someone's listening right now and whether they're Christian or not, and they feel like, hey, I want to be an author. I want to write a book, but I don't know where to begin. Maybe they're afraid. Maybe they're timid. They have no idea which direction to go. Maybe you could share some best practices that you've learned along the way, or what would you say to that person who's really hesitant?
Yeah, that's a good question. I definitely would say write what you know.
Mm.
And I don't mean like, you know, write what you know. All I know is this, but write what you know. If you don't know it, you need to know it.
Yeah, right.
So like, you know, I knew a little bit of, you know, the subject matter in this book, but I had to like go deep. Like I had to read these journals, and, you know, all of this stuff like that. I, you know, felt like, man, I shouldn't have to do this, but I'm trying to, you know, be credible.
Mm-hmm.
but write what you know in the sense of, you know, even if it's not something that's kind of academic or informative, even if it's, you know, you're writing fiction, you know, write what you know. You're a person who has experienced, at this point in life, you've experienced the range of emotion.
Yeah.
Write that. Write that fear into your book. Write that, you know, joy into your book. So write what you know basically means put yourself in the book.
Yeah, that's so good.
And then, you know, the second thing, a book is one line after the other. And I think, you know, for me, this is like the longest I've ever written consecutively. Like, I mean, I basically wrote every day. There were some points where I had to stop, like sickness or, you know,
yeah,
traveling or whatever. But it took me to write this book. I started back in 2019,
mm-hmm.
stopped, like, man, I can't do this. This is crazy. Like, and, you know, I just put it out there like, God, should I finish this book? And, you know, just, hey, I can finish this. Not if I think about it like I'm going to write all of this at once.
Right.
But I can finish it if I do 250 words a day.
Yeah.
And so 250 words usually became 500 words.
Yeah.
And then I got used to 500 words.
Yeah.
And then 500 words became 1,000 words. And it's like, but I had to start at that. Hey, I'm just going to do 250 mm-hmm. words a day. That's like less than a page. That's like half a page.
Yeah.
So just keeping it small, like not shooting for this. Hey, I'm going to write this book. And it's like, just, hey, I'm going to write 250 words a day on this subject.
Yeah. That's so good. So if you're listening out there and you're timid, there you go. Write what you know. Have fun and write from your joy and take it by bits and pieces and you'll get there. So thank you so much. Hey, Ramon, we do this thing at the end of every show. It's called the lightning round. You down to play?
Let's do it.
All right. So how it works is I'm going to give you a series of just two choices and you pick the choice that you want to pick. But the point is, don't think about it. Just whatever comes out of your mouth first. Cool.
Got it.
All right, here we go. Football or basketball?
Football.
Raiders or Rams?
Raiders.
Ice Cube or Eazy-E?
Ice Cube.
Nas or Mos Def?
Nas.
Cortez's or Chucks?
Chucks.
Red or blue?
Blue.
Hip hop, 80s or 90s?
80s.
East Coast or West Coast?
East Coast.
Lattes or black coffee?
Lattes.
Old Testament or New Testament?
Old Testament.
Kanye or Chance the Rapper?
chance.
There it is, y'all. Boom, ladies and gentlemen. Lightning round. Thank you so much for playing, Roman. You know I had to end it off with Chicago, Chicago rappers there. So, and hey, thank you again for jumping on the podcast today. Really quickly, why don't you go ahead and shout out your socials? Let us know how we can get your book and when it drops. Why don't you go ahead and just shout all that out?
Yeah, you can find me on my website for sure, RamonLMayo.com, Twitter at Mayotron, and I'm also on Facebook at Mayotron as well. So that's me.
And then when does the book drop officially?
The book drops, by the time you get this podcast, it'll already be out, but it drops on February 10th.
All right, there it is. Yeah, so... it dropped a couple of weeks ago, and I'm Amazon online anywhere.
Amazon, Kindle. You can get the Kindle version, the ebook, or paperback.
Awesome. Well, there you have it, folks. The always intelligent and down to earth human being, Ramon Mayo. Make sure you check him out on social media. Get his book that's out again, Amazon and wherever book retailers are being sold. Well, there you have it, guys. Ramon Mayo, author of the book Reclaiming Diversity, Destroying the Myth of the White Man's Religion. A lot of great stuff to discuss. A lot of great intrigue from the book. I had the amazing privilege of getting an advanced copy. Ramon wanted me to take a look at it along with a handful of other people to edit the book. And so I had it back in October, even before October. And I was so fascinated by where he was going, the origins of Christianity, and where Christianity went even before it came to America, or even way before, even before it went to Europe, you know, where it has its roots in Africa, in Asia, both the Orient as well as India. And it was fascinating. And I had the fortunate privilege of endorsing him on Amazon. So it was a great read. I think it's going to challenge a lot of people. It's going to make a lot of people uncomfortable when they read it, which I think when you discover your journey with God, there should always be uncomfortable moments, because it reminds us that we are not in control, that we are not God. And when we hit the wall of godliness, we should be looking at the mirror in front of us saying, yeah, you don't have it all together, and you need some. You need to clean things up. You need to work on some things in your life, and it should make us uncomfortable, especially and specifically as it relates to the book, our view of Christianity. When we come into some of these realities and these truths that specifically Ramon was bringing up, it should make us uncomfortable. And if we didn't see things a specific way, or we chose to see things for the tradition that we have normally been used to, it's okay to be uncomfortable, so long as we're continually seeking the truth and journeying. So let's open it up, guys. I know maybe we can start with you, Chris. I know that before we played your interview, you were going somewhere with, does it really matter what Jesus looks like? Talk about that a little bit. Unpack that for us.
Sure. I mean, some of the things that Ramon was talking about, and even with yourself, I mean, we're talking about, it doesn't really matter what color Jesus was, because when we're creating and we're really tapping into our spiritual aspects of things, it's all about emotions. You know, it goes through that filter of our heart first, right? Yeah. Then it goes through our hands or our eyes or our mouth. And so it doesn't even matter what it looks like. It's how does it make you feel? Like, how are you connecting these parables to your everyday life? Forget about everybody else. Right. What does it mean to you as an individual? And then from there, it doesn't matter what anything looks like. You're just growing from there. I mean, there's universal themes about, you know, the harvest, the separating the wheat and the chaff, the cycle of life and death, you know, within the Bible. And these are all written like hundreds of years apart, thousands of miles away from each other. Yeah. But yet there's like these constant themes. And that's the magic of the Bible.
Yeah.
It's like, what do those things mean in your everyday life? So color doesn't mean anything.
Right.
They're all symbols.
What about you, Kevin? What are your thoughts on, you know, does it matter what Jesus looked like? Does it matter what his skin color was? Does it matter what he, you know, the color of his eyes, the length of his hair? What are your thoughts on that? Does it matter?
In just in a concise answer, in my opinion, no, because what matters is what he said, what he did, his actions. And I wrote down three points that I was thinking about. And the first point is decision points. We were talking earlier about being uncomfortable. And I was thinking about back in high school when I had to learn to swim and I would not go on the diving board. That diving board scared me, especially the high one, the one that usually is at the top of the place.
All you had to say was learn how to swim. And I'm already afraid because I don't know how to swim.
the platform.
It's just that feeling of what I remember is that, okay, they put me up on the diving board and I could not move. And they just, they shoved me a little bit. And then there's that one point where you can't go back because the thing wobbles. And then you can't go forward because it wobbles more. And then you're like, you have a decision point. Your decision is you've got to jump.
Yeah.
And God will do that. He did it in my life. You know how that is. He lovingly pushes you and he goes, oops.
Yeah.
And as I'm plummeting to the ground, he goes, you have wings.
He's like, my bad.
Yeah.
Flap, flap, flap. I'm falling down. It goes, well, I gave you the armor. Use it.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I have a different take. So I would answer that yes and no. Yes, it matters, but it also doesn't matter. So on one hand, in our 21st century mindset, in discovering God and understanding who we are in Him, no, it doesn't matter what Jesus looked like. And you're right, both of you. It's the teachings of Jesus that really stand the test of time. When Jesus ascended back to heaven in the book of Acts, it was the apostles, it says in the scriptures, that the community of God, they were committed to the apostles' teachings. And what were they teaching? They were teaching the message of Jesus. They weren't trying to describe what Jesus looked like. They weren't describing, you know, what he smelt like and what kind of clothes he wore. They focused on the message. And even when Jesus, even before he ascended, and when he resurrected and visited his friends there for the first time after, you know, his death and resurrection, it says they didn't recognize him. And I'm assuming, because one, he was in his glorified state. I'm sure that, I don't know, you know, Luke, Matthew, Mark, John, they didn't give any reasons why Jesus looked different. But at this point, we can only speculate. Maybe after his resurrection, he was all bruised up. We don't know, right? And so maybe they didn't recognize him because he was still bruised up from the beatings. Maybe he showed up all zombie-like. I don't know. Or on the other hand, after his resurrection, he took on a whole different form and he looked physically different. Maybe he looked more like what's described in the book of Revelation, where he isn't this calming lamb, but he's this ferocious lion, right? So the juxtaposition between both animals in personifying Jesus lets us know that, yeah, his looks in context to us now really doesn't make a difference. It's his message. So you're both right. But from a scriptural standpoint and studying the scripture and studying the context of where these scriptures came from, I do think on that hand, it is important because it gives us context. It gives us context of what a Jewish man dealt with and looked like under Roman occupation. And so a person is going to look a certain way in that time in history. So from a historical and study of the scriptures perspective, yes, I think it's important because it just adds to the beauty of painting the picture of the ancient world. And I'm not an extreme history buff, but I love looking at different artifacts and different paintings and pictures of not just biblical times, but just of times past. And, you know,
that's fascinating.
Yeah. And we can look at, let's just take you and my context, Chris. We can look at Filipinos here in America, and we look a lot different than Filipinos on the island just because it's a different context. But it gives us a different, when you look at a Filipino in America and a Filipino on the island, it'll give you a certain context by understanding what we look like. Even within colorism as well, we never unpack that in depth, but Chris, you and I know this very well. I think we did a little bit in a previous episode, but you know, in the Filipino culture, being dark-skinned is somewhat of a taboo thing where no one wants to be dark-skinned. You want to
That's like one of the worst things you can do as a Filipino.
Yeah, and the desire
that or wasting food.
Right, and the desire to be light-skinned.
Those are the two mortal sins.
Yeah, and the desire to be light-skinned gives a certain story about that person.
Institutionalized. Right. Yeah, it's bad.
So yeah, that's my long way of answering the question, does it matter what skin tone or what Jesus looked like? Yes and no, depending on what you're studying and what you're trying to understand. But great thoughts, Chris. Great thoughts. Yeah. When I was interviewing Ramon, he mentioned that one of the reasons why he wrote this book was to really lay the groundwork for what Christianity really was. And a lot of times, the conversations that he had early on was from non-believers saying, hey, you know, why do you believe the white man's religion? And it didn't push him to deny his faith. It actually sent him on a trajectory to really explore his faith.
That's a good thing.
Yeah, it's a great thing, which leads me to something I wanted to get your thoughts on, both of you, and maybe we could start with you, Kevin. So, you know, I grew up Catholic, and I was Catholic just because it was our tradition. It was what our family was, and it's what I became. And we see that a lot, too, in Christianity and the Protestant side of Christianity, where we as believers just do things because it's what we have done forever. It's what our forefathers and foremothers have done. My question to both of you, and Kevin, let's start with you. Why do you think, or why does it seem like people are afraid to break religious tradition, in our context, Christian tradition, for the sake of just staying? Why does it just seem like people are afraid to break that in an effort to find the truth? People seem to just revert to tradition. Why do you think people, even if it meant discovering God in a deeper way, why do you think people just stick with tradition of religiosity without wanting to dive a little bit deeper?
First thought in my head is that we are creatures of habit.
Mm, yeah.
I mean, think of the little small things like, what do you do when you get up? There's a certain way that you, put your slippers on. There's a certain way. The first thing you do is go to the bathroom. Then you look at how your hairstyle changed overnight, that how it went from this great hairstyle to this punk rock look because of you're being sleeping, and then you got to fix that. And there's a way you brush your hair. Then there's a, then break that cycle. And a lot of people get out of sorts and they're going, well, I'm supposed to brush my teeth at this time. Well, I'm sorry. I mean, so any change, people freak out.
Yeah.
So I think Christianity is a lot same thing. Well, why do you go to church? I ask a lot of people, why do you go to church? Well, my parents went to church. Mm-hmm. Well, I'm Christian because my parents went to church. And I'm sure as a pastor, you get that question a lot, or you've run into people a lot, or I don't need to go to church, or it's just, it's all personal choice. I just think people are afraid of change,
Yeah, and, you know, your answer, Kevin, was exactly my experience with folks. And it's also the very reason why I believe, especially in our time now, that Christianity is facing so much ridicule and so much negativity. It's because you have a pot full of folks who prescribe to a specific religion just because, without knowing why they follow Jesus. And when you live that out in the public square, it doesn't usually translate very well because you don't really know why. Then you have folks like our forefathers where they use the scriptures to justify, you know, slavery and hatred. And, you know, they, again, we talked about modern leaders using the scriptures for their own personal gain, they follow Jesus not really knowing why. It's just because it's what the family did. And they don't really know what to do with it. And when you ask a person, why do you follow Jesus? And they give you the answer, oh, it's because it's tradition. It's there's family value in it. And okay.
Which there is.
Right, there is. But I love how Jesus, he went to his disciples and he said, you know, who do people say that, you know, who do people say that I am, right?
Oh, I loved when he asked that question.
Yeah, and his disciples are, oh, some say you're John the Baptist. Some say you're Elijah. Some say you're one of the prophets, this and that. And then he turned it around and says, well, who do you say that I am?
And then there were crickets.
Right. Until, of course, Peter stepped up and gave his explanation. But it's that very moment when believers can look Jesus in the quote-unquote face and say, this is who you are to me. And if a believer...
That's the beautiful part when that happens.
Absolutely. And if a believer can look at Jesus in the face and say, this is who you are to me, there you have it. But when someone, a believer, looks at Jesus and says, well, because, you know, it's what my mom and dad believed. It's what we did every Sunday. You know, it's what we did every Easter, every Christmas. It's just what we did. Then that really isn't getting to the foundation and the root of why you follow Jesus. You don't follow Jesus. You follow Christianity. More specifically, you follow American Christianity. You don't follow Jesus.
Jesus would go back and go back to my original question. Who do you? I mean, he would lovingly grill them. I believe he'd be back. You didn't answer my question. Hello. Yep. Hello. Is this on? Hello. Going, who do you say who I am?
Yeah, that's good.
He wouldn't let that go.
Yeah. What about you, Chris? Go ahead.
Well, the way I would break tradition is, shoot, it's pretty much my life story. Mm-hmm. You know, it's pretty much yours too, right? Yep,
that's right.
And so we went through, I mean, the whole Catholic thing, I don't know how many generations deep, you know, ever since whoever the OG Engoy or the OG Mendoza was that decided to say, hey, we're going to be Catholic.
Yeah.
Up until now. And, you know, I mean, I had this discussion on my birthday with my dad, and my dad's like, you know what? You're lucky. Your church actually likes art. Mm. And that's a direct translation of how my faith with God grew. Because in the Catholic church, nah, bro, that's for Pontius Pilate. You know what I'm saying? Right. The entire wall. But at the branch, it's empty. It's my choice. Mm. And it's exactly what you're talking about with Kevin or with me. And, you know, and I mean, you can totally see the change between my Catholic upbringing because that's what it's supposed to do. And then my choosing. Oh, dude, it's like I liberated myself through a conservative institution, you know, seen as the church. Yeah. I'm flying, you know, and yeah, man, I'm choosing it. And that's what I love about it. That's how I break tradition.
That's cool. Any other thoughts from the interview that maybe something stood out to you, something that Ramon said that you guys want to discuss and unpack a little bit?
His little steps he was talking about, you know, just to get his book going, maybe 200 words, 500 words.
Yeah, I love that.
I love that too.
Yeah, one of my favorite songs, like for this year, like I wish I was able to answer it again, but you know that song, Hall of the Mountain King? The classical song, it just goes faster and faster and faster. And you're next thing you know, you're Fibonacciing, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And you're just ascending to these new levels because you're listening to God. You're listening to Jesus. Yeah. You're not messing with this third dimension stuff.
Yeah.
You're going for heaven. You know, and that's what I love about it. And yeah, he's just going for it. Forget the finished product. Just get to your intermediate steps. Next thing you know, boom, you got a book.
Yeah, you know, to that end, to what you were talking about, Chris, I was recently on another person's podcast and she was asking me about my process for creativity. And my answer was something similar to what Ramon said, but I used the whole illustration of thinking outside of the box. And as creatives, we always want to think outside of the box, but we can't think outside of the box until we have a box to work from. And so for me, it's how do I think outside of the box in my creative writing, in my spoken word? Well, I need to jot something down first. I can't think outside of the box by looking at a blank page. I just need to write. It doesn't make sense. Probably not, but I just need to get the words out. So I just write. and write and write and write and write until I'm looking at this page of scribble. Then I can think outside of that. Then I can use some of those scribble, maybe add some, you know, conjugation of verbs and nouns, maybe add some similes and metaphors here. But it begins somewhere. And you're right, Chris. I love that process for Ramon where forget trying to fill up a page with words. Let's start with 250, you know?
Yeah.
And I think
start little.
Yeah. And then it multiplied, as you said. Mm-hmm. And I love that too. Yeah. It's good. It's a good observation there. Kevin, how about you?
Just thinking about in my own life about, you know, do I, as a voice actor, you want to think outside the box. And my coach, who I'll talk to you about later, when I first went with him, I almost stopped going to him because he would just hammer me over. I thought I was doing okay and I was going to get better. And he was like, wait a second. Boom, 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 boom. And then when I left, I felt like I was food put into a food processor and I came out all bleh, and I was like, why am I doing this? And I felt offended.
Yeah.
And I was like, why am I spending all this money for him to tell me that I need to work on this? And then this little still small voice of the Lord said, because you need to work on that.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's the only one that's going to tell you the truth.
Yeah.
And he said, is the mic on? Yeah. You need to work on that. That's why you're going to him.
Yeah.
And it was a step of, you can't think outside the box till you know where your box is. And I'm like, my box is, I always do voiceover like an announcer. And he catches me on that every time. Even in class, he says, okay, your first read is going to be wooden because your first read is always wooden because your second read is better. Then we'll work with you. And I was like, should I say ouch?
Yeah.
To that, but it's the truth. And the point that I want to get to is it's okay to be uncomfortable.
Yeah. Yeah.
And go get to be uncomfortable. And that's where you grow.
Yeah. And I said, as I said earlier too, right, I totally agree with you, Kevin. This book is going to make people uncomfortable, if not uncomfortable, maybe even mad. And I think that's a good thing. I mean, the fact that his subtitle,
that's okay.
Yeah. And the fact that his subtitle is Destroying the Myth of the White Man's Religion, which brings me to one thought that I had that we can perhaps open it up to discussion as we close out here. Going back to American Christianity, what is it about our experience of Christianity here in America that leads us, again, in the stateside, to have this savior syndrome, if you will, savior mentality that not only is Christianity going to go and save the world, but American Christianity is going to go into all parts of the world and save humanity, sometimes not realizing that the Spirit of God, He's everywhere. And the Spirit of God, right, we've been known, maybe not so much now, but there was a point in our history as a country, we were sending so many missionaries across the world to go and share the message of Jesus. A lot of times now, what we're finding statistically, there are more missionaries coming into our country preaching Jesus than we're sending out. But my question is to you guys, what is it about American Christianity that says we have the answer, we have the rights to the message, and we are the savior of the world, and we're going to go do that? What are your thoughts on that?
Might be like somewhat of maybe arrogance, thinking that our beliefs are the best possible beliefs that there are.
Yeah,
you know, and sometimes that might not be right. You know, there's certain things that other people can teach us.
Yeah.
And I think that's one of the reasons why foreign countries, they get kind of mad, like when they hear about Americans going to Europe and they start tripping because they have no ice. You know, that's showing that we're not very compassionate. We're thinking that we're above who they are, and they end up taking offense to that. It's kind of like, yeah, we're kind of arrogant as a country. We have these big old 12 cylinder trucks.
How dare you give me my Coke without ice?
Exactly. And like everybody else is with a little Cooper Mini that's getting like 50 miles to the gallon. And
Cooper
and, you know,
Minis
we're
are eating, awesome, by the way.
Yeah. And we're eating 24 ounce steaks.
Yeah.
You know, and so it's kind of like an arrogant thing. So I think maybe if we as Americans kind of like realize we're not the best thing in the world.
Yeah.
And we kind of reach people at their level and bend down and be like, hey, let's reach eye to eye. I'm not looking down.
Yeah.
Maybe we could get along.
Yeah. And you're talking about, though, deconstructing centuries and centuries of mentality that our country
which is tough.
It is. It is. But you're right. When I travel, and I don't even have to like travel all over the world, but when I connect with my family, at least my wife's family, who has relatives, like we went to the Philippines about 2 years ago and it was a reunion of sorts. So you had folks coming from all sorts of the places of the world, from New Zealand to Australia to Japan, of course, Philippines, a couple of our cousins coming from Paris, speaking of no ice in my soda.
Yeah.
and then of course, America. I mean, the consensus is there that the majority of the world hates America.
Yeah, we're jerks.
Right. And for good reasons and bad, whatever, but
yeah,
a lot of people don't like our country because, and you hit it on the head there, Chris, because of the arrogance that we seem to give off. And again, I say we as us as a whole. I'm not saying everyone is like that. I'd like to think that the three of us at least aren't like that, and a good number of people aren't like that. But I say we because
Yeah, the general stereotype.
The general stereotype, right, of America is you have this arrogant country who believes, now from a religious perspective, who believes that they have the answer and they're going to, and I'll say it this way, colonize our village, colonize our part of the world for the sake of, quote unquote, their God. Not realizing that we are worshiping the same God, that Jesus that you're talking about, I follow the same Jesus. And I'm playing a role here, of course, with someone who's in another part of the country. And I think you were getting to it too, Chris. We have a lot to learn from other people. And from a religious perspective, when we go to other parts of the world, there are so many followers of Jesus who can contribute to the conversation and teach us a thing or two on what it means to live out.
Yeah, I mean, you're talking about the Philippines, right? You're talking about Marissa's family. How many of them, dude, they'd gladly give you all their clothes and run around naked on the street.
Absolutely.
That's so Jesus.
Absolutely.
Over here, that does not happen.
Yeah.
You know?
Absolutely.
Like, they're like, dude, don't even wear my socks.
Yeah.
You know? And it's just like, dude, over there, it's totally different.
Yeah. What about you, Kevin? What's this? What's your thoughts on this whole savior mentality that American Christianity seems to carry with itself?
Well, I think it's a personal thing, and I can go back to only what I've experienced is that people are afraid to be, as I said, uncomfortable.
Yeah.
So I go back to the same thing because they come across with this. Maybe they don't even know it, but it's like a perceived arrogance.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that I'm always right and you're wrong.
Yeah.
But then when you realize you're like me, I call myself a construction zone because I am. I've got dents. I've got, when I stand somewhere, if I stand too long, they start putting flags around me that says, you know, uneven pavement.
Yeah.
Because I am. And I can only look to my own family where we weren't, before this quarantine, we weren't relating real well. But what caused us to relate real well? We sat down at a fire pit one night and we just said to each other, you know, so-and-so, I'm not perfect.
Yeah.
You know, so-and-so, I'm not perfect. And we just hashed out the fact that we come across like we know what we're doing, but we really don't. And there's a certain leveling that happens.
Yeah.
That people are afraid to get to.
Mm-hmm.
One thing you taught me years ago was I had a certain friend that was of a different religion, and you encouraged me when we were just talking about it. They said, go sit down with them. And I want to tell you, I'm still sitting down with them.
It's so good.
We go out to eat and we go to In-N-Out Burger and they are beautiful people.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And
hey, Kevin, and you're not all that much different, right?
That's correct.
Yeah.
We all have dings. And then what is amazing there is they are beautiful in their own way.
Yeah.
And you know, you wouldn't see that beauty if you didn't take the time to give them the time of day.
Yeah. And
yeah. Everybody's beautiful. Yeah, everybody's beautiful. I just wanted to say that in their own way.
Yeah, and you know, Kevin, that's a good place to end off, because I think one of the takeaways from the book, whenever anyone reads it, you're going to realize that Christianity is such a diverse community of people, that here in America, we're striving to be more diverse, right? You have segments of our faith where, you know, it's a predominant religion and, or a predominant race, different parts of our country. And there's always this conversation of how does our church become diverse? Well, when you look at Christianity from a global perspective, it's a diverse group of people. We are a diverse group of people. And I think one of the takeaways from the book is realizing that, is learning that American Christianity isn't the only way. It's not the way, the truth, and the life. Jesus is. But again, the takeaway is understanding that our differences, just, and I'm only narrowing it down to Christians of the world, that our differences should be celebrated. And every believer in Jesus, every follower of Jesus across the globe has something to contribute to the entirety of the conversation when it comes to the church at large. And we, especially here in America, would best serve the kingdom by listening to other people, to knowing or to at least being open and being willing to hear other people's perspectives, because we don't own the market on Christianity. And if anything, I believe it's in China right now. Maybe that's long past, but the latest statistics that I'm at least aware of is the fastest growing region in the world of Christianity is in China, not America. Crazy. In fact, in America, Christianity is declining statistically. Mm-hmm. So that being said, when folks read this book, they're going to realize that there is a beautiful, diverse pot of people within the Christian faith that goes beyond the borders and the shores of our country. And it's a beautiful thing. It's a beautiful thing. We're all uniquely, individually created by God, and we ought to live that out in humility, which I think we've collectively have been talking about throughout the course of this episode. But live in humility, live in the willingness to learn and to look for opportunities to serve, show mercy, and walk in the truth of God. And the sooner we collectively in our country, again, specifically in the Christian faith, can understand that and recognize that, I think the more forward progression that we can experience. And it's a beautiful thing. So, yep.
Great stuff.
Yes, it was. That being said, thanks, guys, for the conversation. I know it's...
no problem, man.
We haven't really got into a deep dive discussion on religion. I know that every episode we touch it here and there, but because we interviewed an author of a book that's religious-minded, it was a good...
Hey, I have no problem, man. As long as it goes to get me thinking about some of the things that I love thinking about the most,
dude,
I'm all about it, man. I'm totally down to flex that muscle.
Amen. Hallelujah. Yeah.
That's my favorite muscle to flex, dude. That's the brain and my heart. You know, I mean, it takes you back to the OG days.
Yep.
You know,
that's right.
Back in the band.
I went to an exercise class once and I flexed a muscle and then I couldn't get up.
because that's my muscle, Kevin. My favorite one, you go through my brain. If you can go through my brain, oh man, then you could get to my heart.
Booyah. Well, hey.
You know.
Thanks, guys, for the great conversation. And those out there, thank you for tuning in this week. Don't forget to rate and review our podcast. Make sure you hit the subscribe button. It's the most easiest way to be reminded of brand new episodes. We'll see you on Instagram at breathe.podcast. And if you're moved in any way, please, we're growing our Patreon page. Please head over to that page. Hit us up with the monthly support so we can keep on doing what we're doing. Again, thank you to our current subscribers of our Patreon page. You are all collectively helping to support this podcast by covering the costs of our monthly fees that go into producing our show. So thank you so much.
Thank you.
And until next time, be the light, extend your hand in love, and make peace with someone this upcoming week. Stay blessed, and we'll see you next time.
Peace. Remember the geese.